This morning, we want to do some review on this chapter 14 and 15 for the quiz coming up next Tuesday, and then continue on with our verbs if we have some time. A few comments about the test. You needn't spend a lot of time trying to review everything else up to that point. There obviously will have to be some vocabulary responsible for, just in order to make some translations. But basically, I'm going to be zeroing in on the features of chapters 14 and 15 exclusively. In other words, grammatically and the kinds of phrases. I don't even have any full sentences that I can recall. Well, maybe some, you know, real short ones or something of that nature. But basically, phrases that contain these various autos, hutos, and the kainos, the demonstratives, and the peculiar adjective autos, as you can call it, and then the personal pronouns, and those related adjectives. So that's what the test will be on. So you'll need to know the declensions and the peculiarities in the declensions of autos, hutos, and the kainos. They all have some unusual features to the declensions, primarily in that autos and hutos having that unusual, well, all three of them, autos, hutos, and the kainos having that neuter singular form ending in omicron instead of omicron nu. And then with hutos, especially the use of the tau there and versus the rough breathing, and very much like the article. So you'll need to know those paradigms. You'll need to know the paradigms for the personal pronouns also in chapter 15. The first and second persons there, ego and su, and their related plural forms. So you'll definitely need to know those paradigms. You'll need to know your basic vocabulary, just in terms of, not that you're going to really test on vocabulary, but I'm going to be giving you, say, phrases in Greek and have you translate them in English. They'll be containing these words, hutos and akenos and so forth, but they'll also be attached to other words we've already had. So you need to be familiar with that. So I would probably just review your vocabulary quickly. And as far as verb forms are concerned, there's very few verb forms on the whole test. The only verb forms that will be on there would be the ones that we've already had, just the in chapters, 12 and 13 and so forth. And I doubt if there's even much emphasis on the past tense form, maybe a little bit. But you need to just recognize them. It's not going to be a matter of forming verb forms. So, and there are probably only three or four or something like that on the whole test. So that's not going to be the emphasis. But you do need to know those declensions, and you need to know how these things are used, you know the grammar of it. So that's what we'll be reviewing today. That'll be for next Tuesday. Any questions on it? Just what you're supposed to study and what you're supposed to prepare for. Okay, let's look at lessons 14 and 15 and get into specifics as far as review is concerned. If you have any questions, we'll just kind of quickly go through this again, pointing out the important features to review. And then if you have any questions or something, you missed something the first time or something's been a problem to you and you can't understand why something is the way it is or something of that nature, be sure and ask it. We'll try to explain it as much as we can. Okay, in chapter 14, we began with this discussion of this peculiar adjective, autos. And we see that autos is appearing both in chapter 14 and in chapter 15, but in different ways. In chapter 15, we see autos used as a pronoun. In chapter 14, we see it used as an adjective. Now, what's the basic difference between adjective and a pronoun? Well, a pronoun is a noun. And so it's going to be occupying positions and sentences that are proper to nouns. In other words, it'll very often stand all by itself, and It will occupy the position of the subject of the sentence or the direct object or an indirect object, something of that nature. Now, autos, when it's used as an adjective, however, is going to be modifying another noun. And the peculiarity, two major peculiarities for the word autos, one is a paradigmatic peculiarity, and that is, as you look at the paradigm of autos given here on page 80, section 97, you notice that in the neuter, singular, and nominative and accusative, we see the form auto instead of auton, as we have come to expect on the basis of other adjectives like kalos. So there's a peculiarity in the paradigm. Then, the peculiarity as far as the syntax is concerned has to do with the position that autos occupies in its meaning. Now, normally we've seen adjectives occurring in four different positions with an articular noun, two predicate positions and two attributive positions. And autos also occurs in those positions, but the peculiarity with autos is that its meaning changes depending on the position that it holds. And if it's in a in an attributive position, it means the same. And if it's in a predicate position, instead of getting a verb to be associated with it like other adjectives do when they're in a predicate position, this one is still attributive, but it has a different meaning. It means the Lord himself, or the very Lord, something like that, if the Lord is in the example you're looking at as it's given here. So, that's the peculiarity syntactically. Its meaning varies with the position that it holds, and the predicate position isn't being understood like predicate positions have been understood in the past. There's no verb to be that's being injected into this thing. It's rather having a sort of attributive type of meaning, but it's got a different meaning. Any questions on that point? Okay, so you'll need to be sure. I can guarantee on the test there'll be examples where you'll have to discern between autos in a predicate position and autos in an attributive position and give a translation for it. Now, as far as this last part, the attributive position is not too difficult. It just means same. The predicate position, you can either translate it the very Lord or the Lord himself if it's the Lord. You just use your judgment on that. Give a translation that sounds good to you. I wouldn't count you off one way or the other on that. Usually it's going to depend on the major context. We won't have much context on the test anyway. So if you give one or the other of those, that'll be fine. Okay. Then there's a few more notes on autos. The fact that it can be used substantively in section 100. Autos, like an ordinary adjective, may be used as a noun. In such cases, it is preceded by the definite article. So if you see an article on it, you can see from that it's being used as a noun. Yes?
An example, Jim? They give there in Luke 66:33. Why is that in the neuter, the
toe-out-toe? Toe-out-toe. Okay. It's mainly because you don't really have... It says the sinners do the same. They're doing something. And a thing is considered a neuter idea. Since the thing that they're doing isn't really stated here, specifically. In fact, in reality, what's probably happening is something was said earlier. I see the sinners do the same. I can't remember. I think isn't this in the context of trying to provide for your, you see in the Sermon on the Mount and so forth, something of that nature. Anyway, what is saying that the sinners do the same would refer back to the whole thing that's being done, a whole action. And that's considered neuter. In other words, if it's referring back to an antecedent, that's, say, a specific noun, say a feminine or masculine noun, then you're likely to see feminine or masculine form for this. But because it's referring to a whole concept, that's considered neuter. That point will become more important later on, and we will see that an article may sometimes appear on a whole clause, and it'll usually be a neuter article. It will say a toe on a whole clause or a whole phrase or something like this, and its whole thing's acting like a noun. And it's generally a considered neuter there because there's nothing really to pick up on when you're dealing with a whole idea or a verbal action or something. Verbal actions aren't considered to be masculine or feminine, just neuter. Okay? Doing good? Okay. So doing good, it's the verbal action that is the same here, the same thing, that the doing good. And so you're not really relating it to a specific noun. Okay? So to-au-to here, neuter form, is representing a whole idea. And the fact that we might even say that sinners do the same thing, you know, in English, we might even put the word thing there. Okay, and that kind of maybe help you to see thing as a neuter idea. So, That's where it's coming from. Okay, section 101. Autos sometimes occurs with proper names without an article. In such cases, it usually precedes and has the meaning himself, herself, etc. Okay, himself or herself, remember, was that predicate meaning, that predicate position meaning. And this is, in effect, what's happening here, although the peculiarity is that a proper name doesn't always have the article. Sometimes they have articles, sometimes they don't. But whether they have the article or not, they're still considered definite because of the fact that they're proper names. And so David is a proper name here. It's specifically, it's got a definiteness, and then it's pointing to a specific individual, not just he, but David. And so because of that, it's effectively as if it had an article. And therefore, autos placed out in front of it is effectively like autos placed in front of another noun that had the article, and therefore you get the meaning himself out of it. So if you just recognize that a proper name is as if it had an article, then you can just generalize what you knew before. Questions on that? Yes, Glenn? Autos this way. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'd be really surprised. I'm trying to think if I can imagine any circumstance under which you might. I don't think there's a hard and fast rule that you can't. I just doubt that you'd ever see because when you have the meaning the same, we don't normally say a same something. You know, if you're using the word same, you're usually talking about a definite idea, comparing it to something else. And itself or
it seems to be matching a predicate position here, so it'd be like. Mm-hmm. Acing itself, mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, see, here's a problem that you would have. The only way you can define the difference between the meanings of autos is because of the position, predicate versus attributive. And you can't discern predicate versus attributive unless there's an article. So that's the reason that you don't know what to do with a thing if you don't have an article there, because now it's no longer in a predicate or an attributive position, regardless of whether it comes before or after. And in the past, I suppose you could call that an attributive position because its meaning was attributed with like an adjective like kalos. But it becomes very, very questionable whether you'd ever, I really don't think you'd ever see it with an anarthrous noun. The only statement about it here in section 98, autos occurs with articular nouns in each of the four positions and so forth. Didn't come out and say that it doesn't occur with anarthrous nouns. But it's only talking about it occurring with articular nouns, so I just don't think you'd ever see it occurring with an anarthrous noun. If you ever saw it connected with an anarthrous noun, it would probably be the pronoun and be an apposition or something. See, autos, like he or she or something like that, and then an apposition to some other noun or something of that nature. Okay? If we ever find one, maybe, we'll keep our eyes open, but I don't think we will. Now, the demonstratives, then, in section 102, demonstrative adjectives, basically, they're functioning like adjectives, as you'll see, but they've got some peculiarities that in syntax and in forms, again. So here we have, in fact, we have more peculiarities in the paradigms, at least for hutos, than we did with autos, and then we'll also have some more peculiarities in their usage. So with hutos, we have, looking at the paradigm, I suggested last time that you compare this paradigm with that of the article, and it may help you to, at least it'll tell you where the positions of the taus are. See, the dictionary form has no tau, just hutos, rough breathing. And the feminine form is haute, and the plurals, hutoi and hautai, in the nominative, masculine and feminine. But all the other forms have a tau on them. So if you just remember the article paradigm, for the article, you had ho and hey, and hoi and hi in those positions, and all the rest of the articles began with tau. So it's just the same as the article as far as that is concerned. So that can help you remember where the taus come. Then, there's another peculiarity here. Well, the same peculiarity we had with the neuter singulars, a nominative accusative. We have tuto instead of tutone, like you might expect. So that's just like exactly like autos was. And it's also like the article was. See, article to, dendron, you see. We had to for the article, but we had a new on the noun. So it's like the article in that respect. Then there's one more peculiarity in this paradigm. and that has to do with the first syllable and whether the diphthong is alpha upsilon or omicron upsilon. And a key to help remember, I guess the only thing you could really look at, I suppose you could memorize them in terms of the feminines all have au, and the feminines all except for the genitive plural have the alpha upsilon. But the neuters also have some alpha upsilon, the neuter plurals. So there's one way that you can remember that's consistent, and that is if the ending has either eta or alpha, then you're going to get an alpha upsilon in the first syllable. And if the ending's got anything else, you get omicron upsilon. You see, because your neuter plural is tau ta, the ending was an alpha, so you get au in the first syllable. The feminine plurals, hau tai, two-tone doesn't work because that goes back to an omega, you see, and you're going to get omicron upsilon. But then tau tais and tau tas, you've got alphas in the endings, you've got alpha in the first part. And then the feminine singulars, they've all got eta endings, they all get alpha upsilon. So to me, that's the easiest way to remember it. And if you'd rather just remember, all the feminines except the genitive plural, and then the two neuter plurals have the alpha upsilon, that'd be all right too. I don't know which is easiest for you. But be sure to watch for that, because it's easy to make that mistake. If you just glide through this and put everything, omicron upsilon and everything, you're going to miss some of them. Okay, any other questions about that paradigm? That's the worst of the paradigms. That's got the most peculiarities. Akenos doesn't have many peculiarities. The only peculiarity Akenos has is the same one that Altos had. In the neuter, singular, and neuter, singular, nominative, accusative, we have Akeno. And I don't know if you mark your book, but sometimes a good idea just to, you know, to underline the unusual forms or something. So when you're memorizing the paradigm, your eye is drawn to, that's where the unusual places are. It's a matter of preference there. Or if you rewrite the paradigm or something, you may do something to call your attention to the places where it's unusual. So you don't make mistakes. Okay, so those are the paradigmatic peculiarities. Now, as far as syntax is concerned, with these demonstratives. Now, demonstrative adjective is in effect something that's pointing the finger at something. It's really calling attention to something. It's more emphatic. This versus that. Now, the only difference between this and that is proximity, either conceptually or physically. I say conceptually because sometimes you may be talking about something very close to you in the subject matter of the context. So you say this, and because you've been talking about that more recently, and then you say that for something you've been talking about less recently. But the idea of proximity is certainly there, whether it's in a temporal relationship, a time relationship, or a spatial relationship, or something, whatever. And pretty much the same in Greek as in English, the way we use this or that. Now, actual appearance of hutos and akenos on nouns, though, has some other peculiarities. And notice these as we see in section 103. The Greek demonstratives may modify nouns, and when they do so, they agree with the nouns in case, number, and gender, just like other adjectives. So that's not peculiar, that's just what we've already seen. But, part A, hutos and akenos never modify anarthrous nouns. So these are specifically stated to never modify anarthrous nouns. Notice the way he's worded that. He didn't say they never occur with anarthrous nouns, just says they never modify anarthrous nouns. If you ever see hutos or akenos beside an anarthrous noun, you're looking at something, a different kind of construction, and that's going to be mentioned later on in the chapter. But if you see hutos and akenos modifying nouns, it'll always be with articular nouns, never with anarthrous nouns. And of course, it stands to reason in a sense of meaning, too. Because if you're saying this or that, you're definitely talking about a definite concept. You know, you're not talking about a general idea when you say this or that. This or that are, in fact, even more definite than the article itself is. It's almost adding more definiteness to it. So you certainly couldn't conceptually relate a hutos or akenos to an anarthrous noun. An anarthrous noun is not definite. So this is very definite. Yes.
Proper name is considered an articular noun.
For the same purposes. Yes. A proper name would be considered in the same category as before a definite noun. Okay. Now then, B, hutos and akenos never occur in either of the attributive positions. So they'll never be an attributive position. So that only leaves predicate positions. Of course, that's the only way you're going to see it. So you'll see hutos Ho, etc. You'll see hutos out in front of the noun and its article, or you'll see hutos coming or akenos coming immediately after in predicate positions. Okay, so hutos and akenos then part C may occur in either of the predicate positions with meanings as indicated below. So they can occur in either one of those predicate positions. Kirby, was a question there?
How would they say like this David
Well, yes. You've got an interesting point there. It's probably not likely that you're going to see that kind of construction very often, unless you say, at least in the New Testament, you know, you might see a situation in which, you know, there's five Davids in the class, and the teacher says, "Now this David over here," then it'd be possible to see a construction like that. Whether you see that in the New Testament, I can't think of any place where a proper name is used that way. So you may never even actually see it used with a proper name in the New Testament. But conceptually, there wouldn't be any problem with it being used like in modern Greek. I wish Themis was still here to ask him how they would use that. They may have even streamlined that out of the language by now anyway. I don't know. Okay. So they concur in either of the predicate positions, and we won't bother to go through all these examples. You can read those on your own again if you're interested. Just take a look at the first one here. Hutos holaos. Holaos, this people. So holaos is people, and then hutos out in front. Or you could have had hutos following, holaos hutos, but it would never be in an attributive position. Later on, after you've gotten more experience with this and seen it and done a lot of reading, you'll find that to try to put this in an attributive position sounds strange. You know, you never hear ho hutos laos, for example. That would sound strange. Now, it may not sound strange to you yet because you haven't had enough experience with it. But, you know, after you read it and read it and read it over and over again, see these things used, then you find, well, that sounds strange. Sounds strange because you've never seen it that way, not in the real text anyway. Okay, and the second predicate position, ho laos hutos. You have the same example in the different position. All right, any other questions there on the position of that? Predicate positions only, then. But they're still getting what you might call attributive meanings. We've got predicate positions, but we don't have a verb to be. See, we're not saying this is the people. We're saying this people. And if you want to say this is the people, you can do that, but you need a form of the verb to be, form of a me there. So we'll get to that later on. I don't know if he even touches on that in this chapter or not. I can't remember. Oh, yes, he does. Yeah, he does cover that next page. Yes.
But it really would be improper to the English idiom to say this the people or these the words.
Oh, yes, yes. You wouldn't need to repeat the article because you've already got a definiteness with this, or, you know, that's already taken care of. Yeah, it would be rather redundant in English to do that. It's not redundant in Greek, but it is in English. See, in Greek, the article in this kind of construction is functioning primarily to establish the position, establish its in predicate position, this type of thing, more than anything else, I suppose. Because your demonstrative is really carrying your definiteness idea without any problem. It's even amplifying the definiteness idea. But then remember, the article use in Greek isn't exactly parallel to what it is in English either. Okay, he mentions also here in point number 2 on page 83, the Greek demonstratives also function as pronouns without associated nouns. And so you can take hutos, for example, and use it as a pronoun, having no noun attached to it, being sort of like it's very similar to a substantive use. And so you can say this or this one or this person or even this man if it's masculine, even though the word man isn't there. This is many times the cases in which the King James, for example, you'll see it'll say this man, and it'll put man in italics because the form was just in the Greek, it was just hutos, for example, it was nominative. And it was masculine, and it was, the antecedent was obviously a man, so they supplied the word man there. But it's not really there in the Greek. It's not really an error to put it in, I suppose, but in some cases, of course, it could make a difference, whether it's this one or this man. If the this one is referring to an angel or something like that, then putting this man in there wouldn't be very appropriate. So you have to watch that sometimes. Haute is equivalent to this one, this woman, so for the feminine form. It can be this one if the antecedent is being referred to as some inanimate noun that's feminine, happens to be feminine gender, or it can be this woman if it's something that is obviously human being and feminine. Okay, then tuto will be the neuter form. Hutoi would be plural and so forth. And kanos, the same kind of situation, that one, that man, etc. So there's nothing really unusual about that. We've already seen substantive use of adjectives, and the same thing happens here. Okay, then point B here under this is the demonstrative pronouns are sometimes used to refer to persons mentioned in the immediately preceding context, and in such cases they are frequently best translated simply he, she, or they. And this is something I take exception to. I've mentioned this to you before. Because we do have a way of saying he, she, or they without tos. And I think it's a gloss to just say that you can translate hutos or akenos that way. Admittedly, in a context sometimes, in English, we might say it more likely with he, she, or they. But I think you're going to miss something. I think it's important, especially if you're doing careful exegesis. It's important to reflect what the Greek is saying. If they choose a demonstrative pronoun rather than just the regular, ordinary pronoun, there must be a reason for it. And so I think that regardless of how you translate in particular, that idea ought to come forth. And so John 1:80 gives us an example. Uk ein ekenos tophos. Well, he translates that he was not the light. But the Greek literally says that one was not the light. And it's got that demonstrative force. And a person might say, well, what difference does it make? Well, maybe you can't see any difference right on the surface. But if you're going to do careful exegesis, you better make sure that you've got the accurate reflection of what the Holy Ghost said. And it could have said, autos. You know, it says, uk ein autos tophos. He was not the light. Why did he say akenos instead of autos? Well, we may not know the reasons right now, but we better make sure we reflect that difference and let the Holy Ghost, you know, make the decisions as to how we're going to render it. That's my opinion on it anyway. And I think you'll see this as a kind of a typical type of an attitude in many of the Greek books that we have, because those that write these books, first of all, many of them don't have the same view of inspiration we do, even if they're evangelicals, even if they, you know, claim full inspiration. As Don preached a sermon a few years back on full inspiration and so forth, if you haven't heard that, you may want to listen to that just as good background for this class and for Hebrew class. But a lot of them are not as careful with that as they really need to be. And you'll see that from time to time come out. And then, of course, if you get somebody like Gesenius or somebody who's a real liberal, he doesn't care anything about that kind of thing. So if you get Gesenius, it's good to have Trigelli's version, because he's got little notes in the bottom sometimes that just overturn what Gesenius said, you know. And he says, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all. He's a liberal. And so he doesn't really say he's a liberal in so many words, but you can see he markedly has a divergent opinion on the basis of some of those things. So in grammar, this time, another thing you see is there's a tendency to kind of gloss and kind of give idiomatic translations and translations try to carry the thought in English. There's a reason for that to a certain extent, but when it comes down to real careful exegesis, we want to make sure that we, first of all, see what the Greek is saying, then try to understand the pattern from the Greek point of view, and then from understanding the Greek point of view, then put it over in the English point of view. So that's something we'll make mention of from time to time. Okay, then when hutos and akenos do occur with anarthrous nouns, they are not modifiers in the nouns but pronouns. So we mentioned this before. They're not going to modify anarthrous nouns, but you may see them with anarthrous nouns. And in those cases, you're going to see them rather as pronouns, and you usually see a predicate construction then, because you'll see two nouns put in apposition, just like we've seen before. And one of our basic sentence types was two nouns in apposition to each other, and we supply the verb to be, and two nouns in the nominative case, for example. So ekenos kleptes esten, here we have the form, the verb to be, and it's usually the case, kailestes. The man, that man is a thief and a robber. And it's not that thief is also a robber, because that ekenos is not going to modify. See, if it was that thief, it would be ekenos ho kleptes. You'd have the article there, ekenos ho kleptes. Then you could have that thief. But without the article there, we have ekenos connected with an anarthrous noun, and it's not going to modify that noun. It's going to be a pronoun, and therefore you're going to have to treat it as two nouns now put together, and that's going to be a predicate nominative construction. So we're saying that one or that man is a thief. Okay, hutoi, and of course we don't even have to call it a predicate position. We've got the verb to be stated, so it even removes any ambiguity in that respect. But in some cases you may not see that. Look at the next example. Hutoi monoi sunergoi. These are the only workers. Now in this case, there's no form of the verb to be, so we are supplying the verb to be there. But hutoi, again, is not going to modify sunergoi that has no article. Now we do have an adjective on it, monoi, but we don't have an article, so it's still an anarthrous noun, and so we're going to have to take these two in a predicate construction. These are the only workers. Yes? Well, yes, I think if you couldn't really have a sentence here. These workers, these only workers is all you'd have there if you didn't have a form of the verb to be. And of course, you can't really have hutoi modifying an anarthrous noun, but if you tried to do that, you see, you'd have an incomplete thought. Okay. You can check the other examples on your own there. Part D, when hutos or canos are connected to a predicate nominative by an equative verb, as in the last two examples above, the demonstrative usually has the gender, number, and case of the predicate noun. However, and of course that's... connected with. But there is an exception to that phrase, tut esten, or tut, which is short for tuto esten, meaning that is. The demonstrative is always a neuter singular. And it's not really a violation of this type of this rule, I suppose you'd call it, because that is usually is referring to a whole phrase or a whole sentence or something like this. In other words, you say the phrase that is when you're trying to re-explain or give a say the same thing a different way, trying to bring clarification, and it's usually a whole thought or a whole sentence or sometimes a whole paragraph or something that is being referred to by the that. And so what you're seeing there is kind of an equation between the neuter word that, a neuter form of the word that, and this whole concept, not just a particular noun. So if you understand it that way, it's still really not an exception. See, in this example we have here, to take tithes of the people, that is the brethren. Well, in this case, I guess you do have more specific, the people, that is the brethren, for redefining that. More often it's used to describe the whole process of taking tithes, for example. And so this is a good example to illustrate what he's saying, because it's about the most unusual case you find. Yes?
Well, wouldn't this literally be, this is, although in English we say that is?
Yes, it's a good point. That's a good point. Literally it'd be this is. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about that. Yeah, it's a good point. It's a form for hutos rather than a kanos. So we have to be quite idiomatic with that. Okay. Be interesting to see what the interlinear does with that, if they say this is or that is. All right. But that's an idiom. So just kind of learn tut estin as an idiom to be substituted in positions where English would say that is. Okay. Good. Yeah, you might check even that verse, Hebrews 7:5, see what they say in the interlinear, see if they say this is or that is. Just out of curiosity.
This is.
They say this is? Okay, so they're being real literal.
Although in the margin, they say that is.
Oh, do they? Okay. Being diplomatic, yeah. All right. Okay. Of course, you see, what difference does it really make, this or that? Just has an idea of the conceived proximity, I suppose, is about the only thing. But even there, the idioms are so used so frequently, you almost lose the idea of proximity or anything else. When we say that is, we don't even stop to think that we're even using a demonstrative, I don't think. It's just kind of a thing thrown in, and in other words, you want to restate something. Okay. Then, point number three here, hutos may be used without tos. You may see these two together. Egrapsa tuto auto. I wrote this very thing. So now, what we see here actually is tuto, functioning as a noun rather than an adjective, and auto functioning as the usage of himself, itself, or the very. So if you recognize tuto being used as a noun here, then of course this fits what you've seen before. Then point four, hutos and akenos may also modify nouns which are modified by other adjectives or which have other ordinary adjectives in one of the predicate positions. So the noun that hutos or akenos modifies may also have other adjectives on it. And they may be in the attributive positions, or they should be, of course, or they may be in a predicate position in some situations too. But ho kakos doulos akenos, for example. Erakenos is in the predicate position, kakos is in the attributive position. Hey chira chaute, hey toche, this poor widow. Okay, we have haute in a predicate position, as it should be, and hey toche in an attributive position following that. Okay, and Makarios Odoulos Ekenos. This, you have two predicate positions. But Ekenos' predicate position gets translated like an attributive, as it were. This, that servant. And then Makarios, in a predicate position, is going to have the verb to be supplied. So blessed is that servant. So you can combine these. Okay, do you have any questions, Mark?
Yes, on number three, why wouldn't it be tuto, to, auto? As in... In 100, when
auto
was used as a noun.
Let me think here. Tuto, to auto, the repetition of the article. In that case, you could almost consider. Tuto is pretty much being considered as definite by itself, even without an article, because a demonstrative is about as definite as you can get. And you're going to want auto to get this very, or the thing itself, you're going to want a predicate position. So you're just sticking the thing right afterwards without any repetition of the article. If you repeated the article there, then you'd be putting auto in an attributive position, and you might be saying this same thing. See what I mean? So that'd be like saying this same thing. But I'm not sure you'd ever see it quite that way. So you really need a predicate position.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is almost what we were talking about before, that tuto is acting as a noun, so therefore auto is operating with an artist. And then it's acting like a predicate position.
Well, yes.
Auto davi.
Yeah, it's acting like a predicate position here, and you have kind of a problem here, because tuto technically doesn't have an article on it, so we have to say from a technical standpoint is an anarthrous noun if it's functioning like a noun. On the other hand, since it's a demonstrative, it's about the most definite kind of word you can get. And so I think you're really having to consider it like a proper name, yeah. Having to consider it as if it's articular. I think that's kind of why he singled this out as a separate case and said this is what it's going to be translated when you see it like this. But I think in reality you're having to think of it, even without the article, you're thinking of it as if it had one, and then you see auto following it like that, it's going to have to be understood as if it were a predicate position. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Makarios Odoulos, if that's Makarios is in a predicate position, I thought it meant the servant is blessed. So therefore, with the Kanos, wouldn't that be that servant is blessed rather than...
Could be. Just as easily. See, in Greek...
There is a difference in the way you say it.
There is a difference in emphasis. There's a difference. The question is whether in Greek, in other words, in English, we say blessed is that servant versus that servant is blessed. We've got a slight difference there. Of course, in English, to reverse word order like that makes more of an impact than it does in Greek, because Greek word order is so variable anyway. So... in Greek, you probably wouldn't be able to make a giant case. I think you almost have to do what the English does, just follow the basic word order of the Greek, assuming that since Makarios is placed first, there's probably more emphasis on Makarios. So in English, they're translating, blessed is that servant. It's just primarily a matter of emphasis. Remember, when you have a predicate construction like this, especially with a predicate adjective rather than even a predicate nominative, are just equating two things. You're equating this noun idea, servant, with the concept of blessed, and you're stating that attribute. So you're really stating the fact that the servant is blessed. Now, whether you want to put the emphasis on servant or on the idea of blessed is going to determine the word order in Greek, and it looks like in English, to some extent, that's the case too. When we say blessed is that servant, we're kind of putting more emphasis on the idea of being blessed. When we say that servant is blessed, then we've got a little bit more emphasis on the idea of servant. So that's probably about the safest way to go, is follow the Greek word order in cases like that. Yes?
Blessed is one of those strange words anyway, which you have a verbal idea in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blessed is that servant.
Yeah. It's almost a passive verbal idea, yes.
Yeah. Whereas if you say that servant is blessed, or that servant is blessed, now you turn it over to a stative type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of some action performed upon him, So in English, just because it's that word,
mm-hmm.
when you switch them around, you get a difference. I don't know.
Yeah, you have a little bit of a problem there, too, because in Greek, this word makarios may not, in English, blessed does have this kind of a verbal type of an idea. In Greek, it may not be. And you see, in Greek, if you want to get that kind of verbal idea, they use participles to do that. They've got a very, very efficient system of participle usage that we'll be getting into next semester, beginning of next semester, and spending quite a bit of time on, because Greek, you've got to understand the Greek participle if you ever have any hope of understanding Greek grammar. They are very, very frequently used. And, of course, in order to do that, we've got to do third declension first, because participles have third declension type endings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what effect it would have, except just to be more... I think so. You're just seeing a little bit more emphasis on the idea of is. And really, really putting some more, that servant is blessed. And I think that's a pretty fair analysis. You certainly feel that when you're reading the Greek. You see Eston there. It's drawing your attention to when it doesn't have to be there and it's there. Then it draws attention to itself. And I think it would be a stronger assertion there. Okay. Any other questions on Lesson 14? So these are the things that you'll be expected to... Basically, the way I'm going to handle Chapter 14 is give you short phrases, like the examples that you see here, have you translate them. That way, I'll be able to tell whether you see whether it's hutos or kanos, is this or that, whether you see that it's maybe in some cases has to be translated as a substantive noun because it's being used with an anarthrous noun. All of these various facets will come out as we... just give you short translation phrases. Okay. Then section chapter 15, personal pronouns and related adjectives. Okay, we'll take a quick review of this. Autos is also used as a pronoun. And it's a third person pronoun, both singular and plural, depending on what the forms are. The paradigm is exactly the same as we've seen before, so there's nothing new there. So if you see autos used as a noun, not as an adjective now, it's going to be a pronoun, and it'll be either he, she, or it, or they in the plural. So, and it'll appear in any of the positions we've seen already for nouns. The only real exception to that is on page 86, in the genitive. Genitive case form of autos may be attributed to a noun when it is so attributed may occupy the first attributive position, but not the second, or either of the two predicate positions. So the only thing that it won't do is it won't be in the second attributive position as a genitive. And that's a little bit unusual. We've seen that normal nouns can appear in any of the four positions, but autos never occurs, at least in the New Testament, in the second attributive position. Okay. Then there's also a little statement here at the bottom. The equivalent of an English possessive, his, her, its, their, and so forth, with an anarthrous noun is usually a Greek genitive, autu, autes, auton, with an articular noun. So thus we have ho, autu logos, or ho, autu ho logos, or ho logos autu, any of those three ways of saying his word. In other words, if we want to say possession, we're going to use the possession. Usually got a definite ring to it. You possess something specific, and so they use the article with the noun. But if you want to say a word of his or a word of hers or something like this to make put an emphasis on the indefiniteness of the idea, you can do that in Greek by not using the article on the noun and going ahead and using autos, autou, or something of that nature. So logos autou, logos autes, a word of his, a word of hers, etc. Now, I think it's reasonably obvious that you're not going to see that kind of construction as often. It's not very often you want to say a word of his, but once in a while you do, and there's a way to do that in Greek. So in other words, if you want to say his word, it's like saying the word of him, or the word of his. As if you want to say a word of his, you just don't put the article on it. It's pretty straightforward as far as what English does, as long as you... don't use the article in English when it is there in Greek. OK, Okay, then the gender of the Greek pronoun in third person depends on the gender of the Greek noun to which it refers, and not on the sex or sexlessness of the person or thing which the noun itself represents. So this is just the rule of concord. The pronoun is going to agree with its antecedent, the thing that is representing in gender, at least, in gender and number, not necessarily case, because it may be functioning a different way in the sentence in which it's being used. But it will agree in gender and number. And so autos and aute may correspond to English it, and auto may correspond to he or she, depending on the situation. So even though if you see a masculine form, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to translate it masculine. You may translate it because it's referring back to, say, logos or something like that. And logos is a noun. It's not a person, unless you're a Trinitarian. So you translate it. On the other hand, in more rare instances, a neuter form, auto, may be translated him if it's referring to paideon, for example. And if it's obvious from the context that the child is a boy, the word child is neuter noun. It may use auto. We may not want to translate it but he. Okay. That'll be a more rare instance, of course. There aren't very many words that are neuter that are referring to human beings. I think there's one korasion or something like that refers to a young maiden or something like that's also neuter. It's not used very often. Now, section 107 is the paradigm of the Greek pronouns for the first and second person. Now, autos takes care of third person, being used as a pronoun. Now we have to look at pronouns for the first and second persons. We have these paradigms on page 88, which you need to memorize. Ego, and then emu or mu, emoi, moi, and eme, and meh. We have both an enclitic and an accented form for those. And the plurals, hemes, we, hemon, hemin, hemas. So do pay attention to these paradigms because they're not like the ones we've seen before. And then the second person, su, for the nominative, su and su for the genitive, soi, soi for the dative, and sa for the accusative. And then the plurals, only one form, humes, and the paradigm is exactly like hemes except the upsilon. So once you learn hemes, you've got humes down. Okay, then he makes mention of the fact that some of the forms are enclitics, and I wouldn't worry too much on this test. Like I said, I'm not going to grade strictly on accent rules. And we took a look at those enclitic accent rules just for the purposes of removing some confusion or surprise when you see, say, a word with two accents on it and no accent on the enclitic and that type of thing. But I'm not going to hold you responsible for all those details on the test, so don't worry about that. Like I said, if you want to go through the test afterwards and make sure the accents are all right and so forth, that's good. I don't know if we'll get any extra credit on this one or not, but on some tests we do. Okay, most of this is going to be in English anyway, at least what you write will be. Then, autos, section 109. Like autos, the pronouns of the first two persons have syntactic functions like those of nouns, except that they do not have the article. And so same kind of thing here. They're used in positions like noun, just like autos. And then the genitive form. Again, the only thing to really draw your attention to right here is on page 89. The genitive case forms may modify nouns. When they do so, they may occupy the first attributive position, but not the second or either of the two predicate positions. Same thing as we saw with autos. You're not going to see these genitive forms in the second attributive position, only the first attributive and then the two predicate positions. So take note of that. That's probably the only real peculiarity there. Okay, then just a lot of other fine points here. I don't know whether we should go through each one of these. You can read these on your own. I suppose to draw attention to points E and F on top of page 90. We see if the noun modified has an adjective in the first attributive position, the genitive case form of the pronoun comes between the adjective and the noun. So, ho palaios hemon anthropos, our old man. Now, what's happening here is that basically, if you've got a genitive form here, it's going to get as close to the noun as it can. So if there's another adjective in an attributive position, this genitive form is going to come even closer to the noun than that does. And then the same thing on the other end. If the part F, if the noun modified as an adjective in the second attributive position, the genitive case form of the pronoun comes after the noun preceding the article, the adjective. Su e ho huyos mu ho agape tos. You are my beloved son. Okay, here, ho huyos mu ho agape tos. We have a noun, an adjective, agape tos, in the second attributive position. But we have the genitive phrase also. But the genitive phrase mu is going to come even before the article and its and the adjective following. So it just tries to get as close to the noun as it can. That's the basic idea, I guess, to help you remember it. Then those possessive adjectives, nothing too unusual there. It's just that instead of using a genitive phrase to modify a noun, you can also use what's called a possessive adjective. And the possessive adjectives are emos, sos, that's for emos is first person, sos second person, hemeteros, and humeteros. And these are only for the first and second persons now. And those will be just like any other adjective as far as their declension is concerned. See, emos, eta, on, just like kalos, exactly like kalos. Sos, eta, on, and humeteros, alpha, on, and humeteros, alpha, on. We have the alpha there because the stem ends in a row. But other than that, syntactically, they're just like the others. And probably used less frequently than the genitive form of the pronoun, but used nevertheless, and here's examples of it. Possessive adjectives with anarthrous nouns. You can use these with anarthrous nouns. So we have hoti emoi mathetai esta, the last phrase here. Emoi mathetai esta. Now, mathetai is the noun, emoi is the adjective, possessive adjective. So you could either say mathetai mu or emoi mathetai. Emoi mathetai, you're going to get the omicron iota because it's going to be nominative plural, just like if you wanted to say good disciples, it would be kaloi in this particular case. Since the noun is nominative plural, you need a nominative plural form appropriate to it for the adjective, just like anything else. And then another, you know, he gives another parallel, mathetai mu esta. There's another way to do it using the genitive form of the pronoun.
Or you could say moi mathetai.
Not really in this case. You're not going to be able to say moi. You could say mu mathetai. You see, if you said moi, what you'd have there would be a dative form of the pronoun. Emoi is the nominative form, nominative plural form of the adjective. You see, if you said moi mathetai, it would be something like disciples to me, something, you know, and emoi would be occupying an indirect object position. Emoi and moi, don't get those two confused. Moi is the dative form of the pronoun. Emoi is the nominative plural masculine form of the adjective. So, and those are easy to get confused, believe me.
And emoi could also appear as the dative as
well. What was that?
Yes,
emoi can also appear as the dative form too. In fact, accent-wise and everything else, they're identical. So emoi is a dative form of the pronoun, and is also the same exact form as the nominative plural masculine form of the adjective. But usually you're not going to get those confused because the adjective is going to be stuck onto a noun. And I suppose it's conceivable to get a confusion between them in some instances. But usually the wording would probably be more careful than that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, my disciples has got more of a genitive idea, and to me is a little bit more of a dative idea. But in that particular example, there's not a whole lot of difference. Disciples to me or my disciples, the disciples of me, doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But in some instances, it could make a lot of difference. Okay. So be careful of those. Yes,
There's no
Steve.
Third-person equivalent to these possessive adjectives?
No. Just first and second person, right. For third person, you're just going to use a form of the autos and the genitive. Yeah. Okay, any other questions there? Yes, Tom?
On our test, when you supply your verbs, you're going to be writing all kinds of different forms of the verb.
Oh, I'm not really looking to that. There'll be some incidental forms, you know, just because, but I think I would just maybe just give a quick review of your paradigms for verbs just so you recognize things, but mainly look at it from, you're going to be looking at English and trying to write it, looking at Greek and putting it in English on those. I'm not going to be having you form verb forms or anything. But just in some of these phrases, I need to stick a verb in there in order to make the thing work, and so I don't think there's more than three or four of those at the most. So I don't know what else to say, though. I think you do have to, you have to remember those basic, now we're not going to look at passive verb forms, of course. We haven't got to those yet in this chapter. So it could only be your active verb forms: present, imperfect, and aorist, and future. So it wouldn't hurt you to review those anyway, but I wouldn't spend a lot of time reviewing those. Because even if you miss a point on one of those verb forms, if you miss the verb, that's going to count relatively insignificant. I'm really going to put the point values on the understanding of these other things. Okay? So, in other words, if you've only got a limited amount of time, I would say, if you've only got a limited amount of time, go through, spend your time on chapters 14 and 15. If you don't even get a chance to review the other, you'll probably still come out, maybe not perfect, but you'll come out pretty good. Okay. I have some papers here, just a moment. If you didn't get your paper, Jim Blanchard, Dale Brown, Robert Peek, Marty Anderson, Eileen Zepka, Wayne Anderson, Lanny Peterson, Jeff Cressy, Dan Carr. Yeah, Tony, I'm sorry to cut you off there. Wayne?
Marty.
So in other words, when they say they're syntactically similar to other adjectives, they can occur in
predicate positions, or attributive positions, and either both attributive, both predicate positions.